Good morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the August 21st, 2025 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners. This meeting is also being made available electronically for access by the public. Terry Lehane, Director of IT, will provide information on this meeting.
Good morning. This is Terry Lehane, Director of IT at Rhode Island Housing. This meeting will be recorded and available for review on the Rhode Island Housing website within 3 to 5 business days after the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, your telephones will be muted. To unmute, press *6. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-429-1427.
Good morning. This is Kelly Kenyon-Lavallee, Deputy General Counsel. All members of the Board of Commissioners are appearing in person this morning in keeping with the Rhode Island Open Meetings Act. Members of the public may also access the meeting via teleconference or attend in person according to their preference. If the teleconference is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until audio is restored. Chairwoman Goddard will preside this morning and will be voting by voice vote. Meeting participants, please state your name prior to speaking each and every time. Telephone participants, please mute your lines if you are not speaking. Now I will turn it over to Chairwoman Goddard to call the meeting to order.
Good morning. I'm calling the meeting to order. And Carol, do you want to do roster?
Commissioner McAllister.
Here.
Commissioner Barry.
Here.
Commissioner Orr.
Here.
Commissioner Goddard.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Weber.
Here.
Chair, you have a call.
Thank you. First item of business is to approve the minutes of the meeting of June 30, 2025. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second, Ms. Speed.
Any corrections, discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
That was unanimous. Second item of business is Chairwoman's remarks. I will be very brief today. We are sort of wrapping up the end and beginning a new year. I truly look forward to being here with all of you for the full cycle of the coming year. A lot of work to be done. We are going to be in a major shift at the end of the APRA and SFRF money. We'll be entering old world, new world with bonding and another dependency. So I look forward to it. It's going to be a challenge, a lot of adaptation for all of us. Carol.
Yeah. We are going to take a look at the quarterly programmatic update today.
Let me just please note that it's in the Credit Center.
I'm a little bit slow this morning. Give me a minute here to kind of get settled. Okay, so this is our quarterly update on financial performance to the agency. If we turn to page 2 of the deck, this is an overview of our financial performance focused on key indicators of the agency profitability, operating efficiency at the top of the slide. You'll be familiar with these ratios. They've been reported on previously in the report. You can see we are performing above recommended ratios in 3 of 4 categories. Our equity to assets ratio, measuring our solvency and leverage, is below S&P's recommended percent, but we believe this is mitigated by our low-risk insured assets utilizing programs like NDS and the risk share program. We've also included a table outlining our income and expense growth year over year, much of the revenue being driven by low prepayment speeds and high investment rates. Also supporting our revenue, but not included in these numbers, is grant revenue like state fiscal recovery funds, admin from that. Much of that funding is offset by expenses related to administering the program, so we've excluded grant-related revenue and expense for comparability purposes. Kara, anything you'd like to add?
No, we are working on our audit right now, so we'll have final, these are close to final, but final numbers soon for 25.
On page 3, our development goals are provided. These are the production and preservation goals that we've set for the calendar year. We anticipate closing 12 new production deals, resulting in 759 apartments and 6 preservation transactions, preserving slightly more than 600 units. We expect to bring 17 projects to completion and lease up in 2025. These developments will provide over 660 apartments and 53 single-family homes. Projects are moving along. We've had a few delays, but nothing substantial or serious. The team has noted that GCs are adding language around tariff impacts in project construction contracts, although we haven't seen any real material impact on tariff-related increases. In terms of production, 9 deals closed during the second quarter, 5 new production transactions, 2 combo deals preservation with a new production component, and 2 preservation transactions. The deals were advanced by 9 different developers, 5 nonprofit, and 4 for-profit developers. To illustrate how complicated our financing can be, the Villages at Manville, which closed in June, had 10 different financing sources, a groundbreaking event. Conley and Partners and our federal delegation to celebrate the start of construction of new apartments in Lincoln.
Carol?
Sure.
Clarification. So the heading on these tables says unit goal and development goal. So are these goals, or are these actual numbers, and for what time period are they?
Alstine, do you know what the time frame? Well, it's calendar year.
Calendar.
So it would be January 1.
Through
December. December 30. It would be through December 31st.
So these are goals, not actual.
Yes.
Do we have actuals to compare with the goals?
I think actual. 200. Well, the development goal is 4.
Yeah,
right.
This is Tara. I think that the first table is the goal. Below that is the actual. The program closing.
Okay.
Well, no, I think the very bottom is the completions. So 664 and 9, is that correct, Dean?
Yes.
Yeah. Let me look at my notes.
Is this what's expected by your Carol, is that it?
It would be calendar year projection, but let me go back. Let me just make a note.
Controls on the next page.
Yeah. Arago.
Okay.
Yes. 9 deals closed. We're hoping for 9 deals to close. So these are our actual goals.
Okay, for calendar year 2020.
For calendar year,
okay.
January 1st through
got it.
December.
Okay.
31st. Okay. Page 4, we've provided 5-year information on closing out production for calendar years 21 and 22 with 100% of all units completed. Developers are working to complete transactions closed in 2023 with 61% of projected units currently in service. 2024, we expect to be a big year for us. We're projecting over 1,000 units to be produced. To date, 4% of that production has been completed. And lastly, we're estimating closing on 759 units in calendar year 2025. And just noting, too, on the slide, staff has added that on average, it's taking about 24 months from completion to close out these deals.
Can I ask you a question?
So for the 24 kind of records here, are we nearly 4% complete? I know that you noted some of the contracts have tariff language in them.
Yeah.
But are we noticing anything? Like, that's a lot of units, right?
A lot
even
of
just for the package here, for managing. You know, it's great because it was just an amazing year, but it's certainly an outlier. So is there anything else that concerns you or?
I think there were a lot of resources that went into the market and at one time. I think our developers are stepping up and they're actually bringing new into it. So I think everyone has been pretty responsive. I
just
don't know of any significant delays that are concerning us. We've had a couple of deals kind of fall apart initially, and then new developers stepped in, acquired the property with Conley, a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
Was unable to perform and shift the deal factor. But at this point, we're not really hiring anything.
This is Dean Harrison. No, we're not on the construction side. We're not. Some of the ones that was closed in 2023, as you recall, we had some shortages and production, you know, getting the supplies and such. Those are all caught up. We're trying to get them completed and done. And on the new ones under development now, we haven't seen a lot with the tariffs. We're preparing for them. There are different wording now in the contracts to address it. But we haven't seen anything affecting the overall construction timeline.
The other thing I'll mention is, you know, we stepped in to deploy ERA 2 funding for the state. There was around $25 to $27 million that we put into transactions, and there is this September deadline that's looming. And we had two projects that we were concerned weren't spending as rapidly as we needed to spend, and so the first thing you think of, if that money goes away, how does it backfill? But it seems as though they've picked up on the ability and submission of construction draws. I'm hoping that the two deals will align with all of the ERA spent.
Okay, that's good. And then just with the 23 deals that are 61% complete, one of the things that we've been kind of looking at are the perm debt conversions and the timing and making sure that the rate lock or whatever the number is in place. And so for those deals, does everything seem on track?
Yes.
Deals with the conversions?
Yes.
Yes. They are all moving along. Some of these are now into like 80% plus. So the construction is wrapping up. Then we have to move over to, you know, obviously stabilization. That takes a few months, but no hang-ups. Once again, things are going smooth. The demand's there, obviously. So it's just, you know, the process itself takes some time.
Yeah,
and this is June 30th, so we've had the full month of July and a good portion of August to have to come through.
That's great. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. On page 5, we added information on speaking preservation. As you know, preservation is equally important to us as new production, ensuring long-term affordability of our portfolio. Between Q1 21 and Q4 24, we've closed on financing to preserve slightly more than 2,500 apartments. In 2025, we've closed on 234 apartments for Q2 and have an additional 368 apartments in the pipeline for closing in Q3. Page 6. This outlines the growth in our multifamily portfolio, which is overseen by our leased housing division. Since 2022, we've added over 600 new units, but also worth noting is that we've preserved more than 2,500 apartments that may have refinanced out other than for the work that's done really by the development group early on to encourage developers to come back and do business with us. Maintenance of the portfolio is important to the agency. We work very hard to be competitive in an environment where folks have choices about where they can finance and refinance their properties. We have our bond programs, and we have FSB, which are competitive tools, but we're also always looking for ways and other options to finance family development program reduction and preservation side. On slide 7, we've outlined the status of SFRF expenditures programs included in the $194 million expenditure target, the Community Revitalization Program, development of affordable housing, middle income, the PHA production program, pre-development and site acquisition priority projects, and TOD. The graph shows that we're approximately $12 million below where we would want to be in expenditures, but I go back to ERA funds, which were funneled into several of these deals, so we're spending that money before we touch any of the other funds. The graph, we've outlined the typical causes of project delays, environmental issues, permitting delays, approvals from other project investors and lenders. Currently, we have 34 developments on track to meet the expenditure deadline. Our team is closely monitoring every project so we can stay on top of potential delays.
Carol?
Yeah.
This is Commissioner Goddard. I think I've asked this before, but environmental pops up, unexpected site conditions. I remember Tony saying you can almost be assured that these site condition issues in Rhode Island.
In Rhode Island. Yeah.
So I'm wondering when we get beyond that being a surprise. And do we have them do more testing? Not that it's not still an extreme cost, extraordinary cost, but we shouldn't be surprised by it.
I think we expect that we're often going to run into challenges, and I think folks do a lot of due diligence up front in terms of test pits and other things on the problems that, that we work on or that we finance. We've uncovered a lot of interesting things over the years. I think we expect that environmental is going to be a challenge, and that's why the numbers are quite high in our development.
I think I'm pushing more back at the developers that they should be anticipating this, and their timeline should reflect that. Perhaps.
Yeah, agree. Is ERA 2, and approximately $27 million made available, and we worked with the state to develop a few programs to get the money out the door, and by a very aggressive September 25 deadline. We developed a site acquisition program, which allowed us to very quickly move to acquire property to develop a pipeline of projects, pre-development program to assist existing deals, with early project costs and a development program through which we've allocated funds for the development of apartments for households at or below 50% of AMI. That's the income targeting for ERA. 100% of the funding is committed, which is good. More than 56% of the funds have been expended. And we keep the Housing Department and the Pandemic Recovery Office up to speed on this quite often. You'd want to hear from us, but quite often. And again, we've alerted the chair and DOA with about the two projects that we have concerns about. Okay, slide 9 is an outline of our homeownership activity. We've provided several years of production and volume. 2023 was a terrific year for us, almost 2,000 first mortgages on volume of over $680 million. Much of the production in 2023 and 24 was the fiscal recovery down payment assistance, which was a huge boom for us in terms of getting people into their first homes. As those funds have dried up, we're now using our bond funds to support a $15,000 down payment assistance loan. We set a goal of around 1,600 first mortgages for 2025. Through the first 6 months of the calendar year, we've closed around 658 units, around $267 million in funding. People are still able to buy, surprisingly. But first-time home buyers are getting into homes. Okay. Page 10, our servicing group. Team services a significant portfolio of single to family loans. So services. The group oversees a portfolio of loans in REO valued at over $5 billion. We've noted that our REO is at an all-time low due in part to strong loss mitigation programs. We don't know how long those loss mitigation programs will continue, we think. I believe it's 2026, right? February 2026 program sunset.
So they've made, this is Karen, FHA has made some changes that will become in effect in October of this year, and then there may be some additional in February.
Mrs. Commissioner, what are the changes?
It has to do with how many times a customer can apply for loss mitigation and the number of months in between those asks. And so we do think that that's going to have an impact on our portfolio.
I'll just also add that if Leslie was here, she would tell you that the number of defaults very, very high. And the people that are redefaulting, that are getting mitigation and not able to pay their mortgages, it's pretty high. So, you know, we're monitoring that, and we'll have options if we're not able to do any more mitigation moving forward. And but the writing is on the wall that if these these loss mitigation strategies go away from people, they have to sell their homes. Of course, many of them have a lot of equity, but they will have to sell their homes or we will have to foreclose.
Carol, I'd be really interested in a real deep dive on how were these folks underwritten, loan to value, loan to interest. Yeah, just how on the edge were they when some of these lenders underwrote them?
You can do that. We can work with Leslie to get something on the calendar.
Thank you.
This is Commissioner Orth. Is there, I know that if Leslie was here, she'd probably say, oh, yeah, we've thought of that before. But for those at least that have equity build up, is there some I don't know, new product that we can come up with maybe to tap into that to keep them in their homes? And I don't even know how many a subset that is, but it seems like that's some resource that could keep them in their home if they want to.
Yeah.
So this is Kara. It depends on who the insurer or owner of the loan is. So with FHA, Fannie Mae, they have the regulations that we need to follow. So with FHA, it's a little more strict in terms of whether they can access that equity without actually selling the property or, you know, are they able to refinance? Well, if they've already been delinquent, then their credit score has been impacted, and so it just puts them in a difficult position. So we are a little bit limited. The loss mitigation options that FHA has are fairly robust until they get to that point. So that they've tried, you know, just about everything. We've tried to modify the loan. We've, you know, they have this payment supplement, many different options. But once they get to the end of those options, that's where we see people are going to have to sell, we believe.
And when you think about the time frame, this like started during COVID, right? So this has been going on for a long period of time.
Sure.
The arrearages are fairly significant.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Leslie uses the tools that she has with her counseling folks upstairs, but I think at some point this is going to end, and owners are going to have to make very difficult choices about selling their properties, trying to take the equity with them and moving into another opportunity. But we know, you know, it's limited inventory. But all of the units we're bringing online, the apartments, are going to help people, but no one wants to lose their home.
Sure.
So it's easier to, I think, for some people to just ignore it and not have to think about it.
Okay.
We provided an 8-year single-family shot on block 11. Our current delinquency rate is 12.6% and increasing. Income tax refunds are often a tool for homeowners, and they often will take that refund and try to become current in their mortgage payments, but folks often redefault. The servicing team, as I said, does a great job processing modifications available, but there are looming deadlines on what can be done. On page 12, we've outlined foreclosure activity since 2008, of course, spiking in 2014, up again in 2018 and again in 2020, declining with the advent of forbearance. We've also shot a foreclosure activity on loans that are less than 3 years old, presenting more risk to the agency given the lack of equity in those properties. Kara, anything else you want to add on that?
No, I would just say it's something that, you know, obviously we are concerned about, but staying on top of and you know, doing our best to offer whatever options are available to keep people in their homes.
Yeah. Lastly, at slide 13, we provided information on our Housing Choice Voucher Program, a vital program for low-income individuals and families, renters, to access and beginning in 2020, the number of vouchers to deploy began to decline. Rents escalated. It costs more to rent an apartment, so the amount of vouchers increased to accommodate that. We went from around 1,600 vouchers deployed to a current level of slightly more than 1,500. In 2022, we implemented a payment standard change, moving to a maximum 120% of the small area FMR so that voucher holders could be successful in finding an apartment. The Province Housing Authority also took this action to support their voucher holders. We know COVID had a significant impact on our program, and we've stabilized a little bit now. Although we're not issuing any additional vouchers at this time, budget utilization, we are adding vouchers, so Dash and Mike Dash, and what else are we adding? Family Unification Dash. Okay. So for follow-up, I'll get some clarity for you, Kevin, and then we'll make sure that we pull together a group of folks to talk about the underwriting that we initially observed when they purchased their homes. I suspect it's with anyway.
Someone said to me, Mishkar, just because we can do it doesn't mean we should do it.
Yes. Yes.
Amy may fall.
Chair, if you don't mind, this is Kelly Kenny in the Valley. I just wanted to note for the record that Designee Craven arrived and joined us right before the executive director's remarks.
Thank you.
And I'll put me mark the affirmative on the first vote concerning the minute.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay. Next item of action is a request for firm approval of financing for Hillcrest Village Apartments in Providence.
Yes, Dean Harrison with the Development Department. I will be presenting next two firm approvals. With us today from POA is Dina. The first one will be for Hillcrest Village. POA is requesting a tax exempt bond up to $35 million, of which $15 million will remain as a Rhode Island Housing First mortgage. This development received preliminary approval back in October of 2023. Hillcrest Village Apartments is a 130-unit development located in Providence. It's a six-story development built in 1979 and extensively renovated in 2005. The development consists of 112 one-bedroom units and 18 two-bedroom units serving residents up to 60% of AMI. The developer is in the process of renewing the HAP contract for an additional 20 years with the rent mock up to market and extended through 2045. Since preliminary approval, the development has received a Green Resilient Retro Program, GRRP, award from HUD in the amount of $7.8 million or $60,000 per unit. As a result, changes to the initial scope of work will include a new high-efficiency HVA system, rooftop and parking lot solar arrays, strengthening of the roof to support those, new windows and replacement of exterior brick with new energy-efficient siding and additional insulation throughout. Further upgrades will include upgrades to kitchens, baths, and finishes, a new roof, Wi-Fi, washer and dryers, and elevated monetization. In addition, three ADA accessible units and three additional units will be upgraded to conform to the 2% hearing and visual impairment guidelines. The total development cost has increased since preliminary approval. The increase can be attributed to the GRRP award, which added an additional $60,000 per unit in construction costs and also triggers David Bacon, along with additional architectural and engineering costs to address the GRRP changes. The high acquisition cost supported by a Rhode Island Housing Commission appraisal is also a key driver at $184,000 per unit. Boston Financial is the syndicator paying 87 and a half cents per credit, generating approximately $27,850,000 in total equity over 10 years. The annual tax credit amount will be $3,180,934. The investor is Citizen Bank, and Rhode Island's housing bonds will come in at approximately 50% completion. Happy to answer any other questions.
Staff motion?
So moved. Kevin Ward.
Second?
Second, Mr. Steeves.
Questions and comments? I see notes.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to make note that we did have a pretty healthy discussion of this transaction in the next one in credit committee meeting. Some of the topics included the high total development costs. I think where we came out was that there are no state funds, there's no Rhode Island funds going into this transaction. We would very much like to welcome these federal funds coming in and welcome the tremendous amount of rehab taking place at this property. I think that just adds a security for us as a lender at that. The other one was, it is a very large equity bridge loan, about $20 million. I think our risk is significantly mitigated because Citizens Bank, which is a tax credit investor, is going to be providing the construction loan up to the 50% point, and then we come in. I think those were the, and obviously the cost of the rehab is very, very high. It went from about $90,000 a unit now to about $200 a unit, I believe. So it's pricey, but again, we felt like this was definitely a deal that we wanted to have without even our own funds going into it. So we approved it.
This is Commissioner Goddard, and echoing or following up on that, as noted here but not in the presentation, and I just think it's important to keep calling this stuff out, the GRRP increased construction costs but has a significant impact on reducing long-term operating costs.
Exactly.
That's a really critical item to be clear about. As well, on the high, quote-unquote, high acquisition costs, this is really paper. And I don't say that cynically. It's a way to boost the value of the 4% and not costing the agency or the state anymore.
Correct.
Thank you.
Correct.
Any other comments, questions? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It's unanimous. Next item is the federal approval of financing for Hillside Village Apartments in Providence.
Once again, this is Dean Harris, and I will present presenting this request for action. Hillside Village Apartment, once again, is being undertaken by POA, and the request for a tax debt bond up to $13,200,000, of which $5.3 million will be remaining as Rhode Island Housing First Mortgage. The development at the time also received preliminary approval back in October of 2023 as part of a combined preservation deal with Cassett Manor, another POA development. Since then, because of the GRRP in this, they also decided to separate it up from Pocasset. Pocasset did move forward, did get firm approval, and has closed. Hillside Village Apartments is a 42-unit family community built in 1991 in a three-story building. The development consists of 24 two-bedroom and 18 three-bedroom units serving residents up to 60% of AMI. The developer on this is also working to, in the process of renewing the HAP contract for an additional 20 years and will be extended through 2045. As the other one, after preliminary approval, Hillside Village was awarded $2.52 million of Green Resilient Retro Program, GRRP funds. Since the GRRP funds triggered David Bacon wages, POA decided to separate the properties into two standalone deals, as I mentioned earlier. As a result of the GRRP award, the original scope of work changed. Energy improvements from the GRRP funds include new high-efficiency HVA system, strengthening of the roof understructure, removal of the current facade and replacement with rigid foam sheathing, foundation, rigid foam insulation, and rigid foam sheathing on the roof. The remainder of the construction scope includes new kitchen cabinets, countertops, updated lighting, interior doors, VCT flooring, and other bathroom upgrades. Additionally, community-wide renovations and improvements will include new roofs, full building Wi-Fi, new washer and dryers, and clapboard siding. The TDC permit does exceed the $450,000 per the unit thresholds as identified in the 2005 qualified asset allocation plan. High acquisition costs by a Rhode Island Housing Commission appraisal are key to the driver at $222,000 per unit, along with $60,000 per unit in the additional construction from the GRRP funding, as outlined further earlier. Boston Financial is the syndicator, paying 94 cents per credit, generating approximately $11 million in total equity. The annual tax credit amount is 1.174, and that is, and an investor is Citizens Bank also. Rhode Island housing bonds will come in at approximately 50% completion. Happy to answer any further questions.
Have a motion.
So
moved, Rebecca. Second. Second,
this is Rob.
Questions or comments? This is Commissioner Vada. And just, again, this sort of shows the same extension saving as the prior in terms of motion, in terms of energy saving cost overall, and just in the first sense due to the acquisition, which is a paper transaction. Any other comments?
One really quick question, Marty and Gary. The tax credit pricing seems to be fairly different between the two deals. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. The pricing is different on the two, and from what we gathered through the discussion with the investor and such, is that the timing of delivery on credit on the larger building is going to be delayed out further because of the time. So that affected mostly, and given the new market conditions, that's the biggest reason they gave us. That's why the difference in pricing.
Okay, given there might be shifts in credit.
Yes, yes.
Other questions or comments? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That was unanimous. Next, firm approval on the 2020 qualified allocation plan.
Hi, Dean Harrison again. I will be presenting this request for action. At the June 30th, 2025 meeting at the Rhode Island Board of Commissioners meeting was approved of the draft 2026 qualified allocation plan, which will govern the allocation of low-income housing tax credits and authorize the publication of a notice advertising a public hearing on the draft 2026. A public hearing was held on July 15th, 2025 via video conference with approximately 18 attendees. The public comment period ended on July 18th, 2025. As of that date, four parties have submitted written comments, which are summarized below on Section 2. Some of the staff proposes the following changes to the draft 2026 QAP and is summarized below in the request for action. I'll quickly go through those. We basically, on Section 1, D8, include reference to the IRS Section 42 for information regarding exceptions to acquisition. Section 1J, affirmative action, equal employment opportunity, revised to acknowledge the possibility of future changes in state law. Section 1K1, citing and marketing considerations, revised to clarify Rhode Island's housing position regarding access to housing on an equal basis without regards to protected characteristics. Section 1K1, limited English proficiency, revised to better align with the current federal guidelines. Section 3, mixed income, revised to correct typo and clarify restrictions for eligible units. The final 2026 QAP is set forth as an attachment. The 2026 QAP will become effective upon 1, final approval by the Board of Commissions, 2, the approval by the governor, and 3, posting to the Rhode Island Housing website as guidance documents. Happy to answer any further questions.
Do I have a motion?
Motion to approve, Mr. Steve.
Second?
Second, Maria Berry.
Questions? Comments? This is Commissioner Goddard. I just want to, I've said this before, but I want to thank Rhode Island Housing for incorporating elements related to the Housing 2030 plan. There's a lot of things to balance in the QAP,
yes.
And we appreciate that thoughtfulness.
If I could just mention, shared a lot of conversation and discussion around single room occupancy units and shared living. One could argue that they're both the same thing, depending on what folks are referring to. And it's been our experience with our portfolio that large-scale SRO developments like we saw in Newport, that Church Community Housing later reconfigured because it simply didn't work for high acuity residents of their development in Newport, and also Crossroads, who is now working to reconfigure their tower building. And, you know, that was a large building, again, helping people with very high acuity. Although, as an agency, I think we have to state firmly that we're open to any type of living arrangement. We just think large-scale SRO shared living doesn't work well. And I think we certainly support smaller-scale shared living properties. I think, you know, we've supported it in the past, and they continue to operate and work very well. But large-scale, which is what I think most of the discussion has been about, is just not working well for us in Rhode Island.
Thank you. Any other comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That was unanimous.
Thank you.
Approval of the fiscal year FY26 operating budget.
Thank you. We're pleased to bring this budget to you, and budget details, revenue and expenses. For this fiscal year, we're projecting net revenue of $18.7 million, up from our fiscal year 25 budgeted net revenue of $10.9 million. So a very good year for Rhode Island Housing. Net interest income projected for fiscal year 26 is an increase of more than $10 million compared with our fiscal year 25 budget. We're achieving this through low prepayment speeds and issuing bonds for our single-family lending. Single-family production is estimated at $600 million, primarily financed through bonds, only 25% of so being sold to Fannie Freddie or TBA. Our development group continues to do a great job deploying fiscal recovery funds for multifamily projects, moving deals to closing. We expect overall multifamily lending across all lines at approximately $156 million. Similarly, we expect fee income to increase this fiscal year, primarily due to an increase in loan servicing fees, given the growth in our multi and single portfolios. Our program budget is outlined on page 3 with program descriptions on page 4. We expect to continue to fund important programs to support residents of our state, including rental assistance. A couple of these programs, State RAP and the Neighborhood Opportunities Program, we've been working to wind those down. These are legacy programs that were created by the state of Rhode Island and then transferred to us to operate. We've added a budget line item of $1 million under our preventing homelessness category. And this is going to be used for families that received COVID vouchers, and they are winding down. So we need to come up with solutions for over 100 households that have these vouchers. If feds do not provide tenant protection vouchers, we're going to have to meet very quickly and move to stabilize these folks. Otherwise, they'll end up as part of the homeless statistic in our state. So Mike and his team is going to start meeting folks to talk about options for them, and we hope that this $1 million can be used as security deposit, first and last month's rent, et cetera. We propose to continue to support our partner LISC through the organization's NDF program, which provides capacity support dollars to support our nonprofit developers. It's a program that's been in existence in Rhode Island since 1995, and it's really done a lot of good work in building capacity among our nonprofit folks. We're going to continue our investment in healthy housing, which is linking supportive housing with services. And this was a great program that came out of our work with Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. So we think having services, particularly health services, for residents in our developments really ensure their success in stable housing. We are budgeting for down payment assistance to support first-time home buyers. This assistance is usually the catalyst that allows folks to get into their first home. So we're happy to be able to continue that support. And we're proposing to support our Home Secure program again this year, which provides a grant to first-time homebuyers. It's an escrow. If the boiler breaks down, if the hot water heater goes, they can use their resources to pay for that repair, but use the grant to pay their mortgage. Whatever funds are left at the end of 3 years, Sarah, 5 years?
3 years.
3 years is a principal write-down to their mortgage. And in exchange for this grant, they complete a much higher level budgeting and managing your household finances, et cetera. Again, our ZEOS program in collaboration with OER, we hope that OER continues to receive funding, federal funding, to continue this work. We expect operating expenses to increase by approximately $4.1 million. Some of this increase driven by maintenance, consulting, and technology expenses. We're also budgeting for merit increases for eligible staff, and we always anticipate an increase in medical coverage. So, Kara, I'll turn it over to you.
Sure. If you look at page 5, we include a summary of some of the high-level items of our revenue and expenses. And just to point out a couple of items, our net interest income, which is our largest revenue item, has a significant increase over the budget from last year. As we previously discussed, it's primarily due to low prepayment speeds. Interest rates have not come down as quickly as people had expected, and so people are staying in these mortgages if they have low rates, which helps us, you know, continue our program. The net interest income is made up of about 35% single family and 65% on the multifamily side. Our fee income, that's about 50% loan servicing, that fee income. So it's servicing fees. There's also fee income for the loans that we originate, fee income for the administration of federal programs such as PBCA and some of the SFRF programs that we're working on with the state. The gain on sale of loans, single-family loans only. Those are the loans we're selling directly to Fannie and Freddie or selling in the TBA market. We have not done a lot of that the past few years. As the market changes, we evaluate the rates every day, and as the market changes, we may see an increase there, but we're waiting to see what happens with rates. On the expense side, we have estimated an increase to our allowance for loan loss. We're not experiencing losses right now on our loans, but because our portfolio has increased, we want to make sure that we have a buffer there if things change. Carol went over the programmatic expenses in detail and talked about some of the issues on the operating expenses, increase for technology, some maintenance in the office, security, and then merit increases, as well as an increase in health insurance rates. But I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. We've included a couple of graphs in the next couple of pages, which highlights the revenue and expenses by division, and then a five-year historical trend for both revenue and expenses.
Do I have a motion? Questions or comments?
Commissioner, more than a question. Thank you. So we're forecasted in 2025, and I know you're working on those final numbers, but so this is an approximation, but we're looking at net revenue of approximately $25 million.
Correct.
And we've talked about taking, as a board and executive team, taking a look at our net revenue for the year, and then looking forward, how do we want to spend that money? What are our priorities?
Mm-hmm.
I believe that you've laid out in this program budget of about $7 million some of how we're going to spend that,
right.
25. But that still leaves about $18 million. So where is that going? Is that, I know we have other demands of building up our equity, so maybe we're putting it into reserves to build up our equity, for instance, but
if I may.
I'd like to, yeah.
Having talked with Carol and Kara and financial advisor, we're expecting to come back in September or October. A lot of what we're talking about today is sort of legacy programs, and we're coming back September or October projection.
Okay.
And probably because the housing farm as well, and we don't want to look at it either.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But thank you for bringing that up.
Sure.
And we are working on
it.
We are working on a five-year project.
Okay. And then the revenue expense by division, I think this goes to one of the goals that we've laid out for you, Carol, coming up. But maybe this isn't so neatly done, but as I look at it, it seems like every division is kind of net positive,
mm-hmm.
but for leased housing, which is strange. I would think that our fee income would kind of match how much we're spending on it, but there seems to be a gap of like 6%.
Yes, so this is Kara. So leased housing is a positive, about 2% positive in our overall net income. So, you know, the fees are covering all of our expenses, but right now it's not covering excess. The lease housing division also has asset management, so it's not just the administration of the grants, it's also asset management, and that activity has really picked up with the additional units and the SFRF programs.
Should that go under, say, loan servicing then, so that we can kind of tie these
different
up a little neater?
Yeah, we've had asset management in the loan servicing division previously, but we found that there was more of, a synergy having it in leased housing, along with they're out doing inspections for PBC.
Well, I'm not talking about personnel. I'm just talking about the financial side. So we can, what we want to get to is how much are we bringing in by division and how much are we, putting out by division.
Yeah. So we can separate the leased housing into the two departments, asset management versus kind of the program administration. And then that would help you to see, where that income and expense lies, if that would be helpful.
I think so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Any other questions or comments? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That was unanimous. Approval of the Executive Director's FY26 performance goals. As many sitting at the table know, that I worked first with Carol and received input from board members for these performance goals, which I think are quite inclusive and substantive. In some places they're qualitative, in some places they're quantitative. I think they bring a good mix. Do we have any questions or concerns or thoughts? See how good a job I consulted with my peers.
Kevin's going to have a question.
I want to hear from you. What do you think of these?
Yeah.
They look good to me.
I think they are, I think they're goals. I love the opportunity and appreciate the opportunity to do a deep dive into the LIHTC program and where we can streamline processes and maybe make that a faster process for developers and certainly for the team that has to work on all of the proposals that come through the door. Also, I think it's a terrific time to look at our design and construction area and their oversight of projects. We have a terrific reputation as to how we manage the work that goes on, but sometimes I think we could be a little less heavy-handed, and I think that probably would save time for a team that has really grown. We look forward to welcoming our new Director of Development on board Monday, and she's joining us from Arizona, and so she'll have an interesting perspective, having worked with Tribe, the folks. So I appreciate the feedback and the weigh-in from the board on your thoughts on this, but I think they're a good group of goals and happy to get started on them.
Do I have a motion?
Second, this is Steve.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That was unanimous. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved, Steve. Seconded, Rob.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That too was unanimous. Thank you.